Okay, so the new perek, fourth perek. Okay, so the topic of the perek is going to be, is beginning of the perek, the questions we need to ask, the way that we investigate the truth of any given testimony. So the Mishnah tells us that echad dinei mamonos v'echad dinei nefashos bedrisha v'chakira. Whether we're talking about a monetary case or we're talking about a capital case, so the judges need to ask a series of questions to try to ascertain the truth of what they're saying, try to figure out, do they understand all the details, they're going to contradict each other, etc. How do we know? Shneimar mishpat echad yelochem. Because the pasuk says that there shall be a uniform law for you. So just like we have a requirement in case of capital punishment to try to figure out whether the witnesses are telling the truth, and we do that by asking a series of questions, so we have to do the same thing for monetary cases. So ma bein dinei mamonos ladin nefashos. So if in that regard they are the same, there still are differences. So what are the differences between monetary law in capital cases? So the Gemara says, well, first of all, as we already know, dinei mamonos b'shlosha, b'dinei nefashos b'esrim u'shlosha. Monetary law is judged by a court of three, or as we saw in the earlier prakim, possibly that's only l'chadchila, and maybe you could have two, or you could have one under certain circumstances. But a basic court for monetary law is three judges, and for capital punishment is 23. Dinei mamonos poschen bein l'schus bein l'chova. In monetary law, when you begin the discussions in court, so you can start either by arguing why the plaintiff should be guilty or the plaintiff should be innocent. Presumably the reason is, as the Gemara points out, the Rishonim point out in different places, well, monetary law is l'schus for one person, l'chova for the other person. If I say that Reuven owes Shimon $100, then that's to the detriment of Reuven, to the benefit of Shimon. If I open by trying to explain why Reuven is exempt, so then what I'm really doing is saying that Shimon won't get the money. So by monetary law, you can start however you want, any argument that comes to mind, whether they would obligate the plaintiff or they would exonerate him, so you're allowed to open with it. But that's not true by capital crimes. By capital punishment, we have a bias towards exonerating the defendant, and therefore we always begin with arguments towards the innocence rather than arguments towards their guilt. Now that makes sense on many levels. I mean, it's true in Western courts now as well, that the bias is always towards exonerating the person. It also makes sense, I mean, psychologists talk about this, that you're heavily influenced by the first thing that you hear, or the first experience you have with a person. They call it the halo effect and the devil effect, right? If the first experience you have with a person is good, then you have a tendency to view any future ambiguous interactions with that person as good in light of the first positive experience. The halo effect, and the opposite is the devil effect. So we're trying to set the tone for the court case in favor of the defendant. Therefore, the first argument that's offered has to be one towards innocence. Dine momenos maten alpi echad. By monetary law, we can adjudicate the case by a majority of one. Bein l'schus bein l'chova. Whether you are obligating or exempting the person in question. V'dinei nefashos, but when you're dealing with capital crimes, so matin al pi echad l'schus, v'al pi shnayim l'chova. So if it turns out that it's 12-11 in favor of exoneration, so then you can judge the case. But if it's 12-11 in favor of conviction, so then you can't, right? You can acquit by a majority of one, but if you want to convict, so you need a majority of two, which really means, well, essentially three, right, because it's an odd number. So it would have to end up being 13-10, unless you ended up adding judges, in which case not necessarily, but you always need a majority of two. Dine mamonos machzirin bein l'schus bein l'chova. If new evidence is introduced in a monetary case, so you can open up the case again, because like we said, any new evidence, it may be that you've already acquitted somebody, but that means that the plaintiff may have been acquitted, but that means the defendant, I did that wrong, the claimant will lose money, if you rule against them. And therefore, if we get new evidence, we'll always open the new case, the case anew. But that's not true by dinin nefashos. By dinin nefashos, machzirin lechtzchos, vein machzirin lechofa. By capital crimes, so right, we in Western law we call it double jeopardy. Right, once someone has been acquitted, they're acquitted. You can't reopen a case in order to convict. On the other hand, if someone has been convicted and you have new evidence to acquit, so we do reopen the trial. And the same is true in halacha. Dine mamonos hakol melamdin schus v'chova. In a monetary case, all judges, regardless of what they've previously argued, can argue in favor or against the defendant. So if they had previously offered arguments to acquit, so now they can offer arguments to obligate, and vice versa. But dine nefashos hakol melamdin schus by capital cases, so if someone had previously offered arguments to convict, but then they come up with a reason why they should acquit, so they can offer the reason to acquit. But if someone had previously offered an argument to acquit, they can't say, you know what, I've changed my mind, I think I should convict. Again, the burden of proof is always on someone who wants to convict. We always have a bias towards acquitting, and therefore once you've offered arguments to acquit, you can't now come back and offer arguments to convict. Dine mamonos, amalameid chova, melameid schos, amalameid schos, melameid chova. I just read that one. That's what I just read, right? Yeah. Sorry. Not everybody can do it, and the second one is talking about people who've already offered arguments can come back and acquit. What I said before, the returning to the issue is the second clause. The first one, the Gemara will explain what we're talking about. It's not the same as this clause, where it's someone who's already offered arguments to acquit can now offer an argument to convict. The Gemara will explain what that first clause meant. The Gemara then says, Dine mamonos done in biyom v'gom b'layla. Monetary law, while you have to start the case during the day, you're allowed to finish it up at night. Dine nefashos done in biyom v'gom b'yom. Capital cases must be judged entirely during the day. Monetary cases, we can open and close the case in the same day. By a capital case, so if you are going to acquit, so then you can close the case in a day. But if you want to convict somebody, you got to give it a night. Right? You got to sleep it, you know, take a night, sleep it over, think it over, because maybe you'll get some more arguments, you'll have more reasons, you'll think about overnight to acquit, so we give you the extra day, and we don't allow you to close the case in a single day. Lefichach, and because we need an extra day, so at least in the case of capital punishment, ain't done in lo be'er of Shabbos, lo be'er of Yom Tov. So you don't start a case on Friday or on Erev Yom Tov, because then the second day would be Shabbos and Yom Tov, and you can't judge then, so you have to give yourself at least 2 days for the possibility of judging the case. Dine mamonos, hatmeos, vataoros. In monetary law, now the Gemara introduces other, in ritual law, in tumantara, where again, we don't have a bias, which direction we want the case to come out with, so maschilim na'agadol. So then, as is due his honor, we start the arguments from the greatest judge present, right? That's the most respectful thing to do. But Dine nefashos maschilim min atzad. But there's a problem. By capital punishment, because we don't want to bias people towards, we don't want to bias people towards conviction, what would happen if the Rosh Hav Beis Din would offer arguments to convict? So then, you know, the new judge on the court is going to be cowed and won't want to offer arguments to acquit, and therefore we're afraid that you might stop arguments for acquittal if you allow the Rosh Hav Beis Din to begin, because he might offer something which would convict, and therefore everyone else will be scared and won't want to offer arguments for innocence. So we start the opposite side. We start from the most junior of the judges, because then They don't know how the greater judges are going to argue, and therefore they'll offer arguments, hopefully, for acquittal. Hakol k'sherin ladun dinei mamonos. All people are allowed to judge monetary law. V'ena kol k'sherin ladun dinei nefashos el kohanim levim v'yisraelim amasin l'kehuna. But for capital punishment, someone needs to have pristine yichus, pristine lineage, and therefore it's only someone who would be capable of marrying into the kehuna, meaning people who are miyuchas, people who don't have lineage issues. So that's the Mishnah. The Gemara then continues. Dinei mamonos. Mi be'inan drisha v'chakira. The Gemara says, wait a second. The Mishnah starts off by saying that just like we investigate and turn over every question, every detail of the witness's testimony in the case of capital crimes, we do the same by monetary law. But is that true? Uriminu, but we have a contradictory brisa which says that shtar bizmano kasuv be'echad b'nisan b'shmita. Uvau Aidin Vamru Hechatem Eden Mashtarzev Alom Bion Ploni Imanu Ayisim Bimakom Ploni. If you have a document which is signed for Rosh Chodesh Nisan on, you know, whatever year of the Shemitah, meaning on such and such a day and such a year, we sign this document. And witnesses come in and they say, how could the witnesses have been present to sign that document on September 1st, 2017? You were, we'll assume this is happening a month, you were with us at that time in another place, and that's what normally we call Edom Zoman. The Gemara says, Shtar Kosher, the document works, the Eid of Ksherim, and the witnesses are still kosher. Why? Because Chayshina, Shema Ichru, V'chazvu, because there's a notion called a Shtar Me'uchar, right? A post-dated document, and you're allowed to do that, because a post-dated document works to the disadvantage of the person signing it. So you're allowed to do that, right? If I say that I owe you money, so if I write, I owe you money from August 1st, so then any property I owed as of August 1st is going to be leaned to the loan. But let's say I would write, I borrow the money on August 1st, but I only wrote that the loan took place on September 1st. So that means that the creditor is agreeing to not put a lien. Any property owned before August 1st would have a lien, and anything that would happen later, right, would be next in line, right? You pay back loans in the order in which they were lent out. So if someone agrees, the creditor agrees to make it as if the loan wasn't extended until September 1st, that means that any loan offered, let's say, between August 1st and September 1st will get precedence over the loan on September 1st. Right, because from a legal standpoint, the documents will show that the loan was offered only on September 1st, and therefore the loan extended on August 15th, let's say, would get precedence in terms of collection over the one September 1st. So it's to the disadvantage of the creditor to post-date a document, but if that's what you want to do, you have the right to do that, and therefore we allow you to post-date documents. So the Gemara says it may be true that on September 1st, the witnesses that are signed in the document weren't present to sign the document. That doesn't mean that they're lying. It could just be that the loan was extended on August 1st and they post-dated the document, and therefore it's not a problem.
The September 1st, if it's signed September 1st, you're saying that the August 15th takes precedence to August 1st?
If the loan was actually extended August 1st, but the document says September 1st...
No, let's say it actually would happen September 1st.
No. So then, obviously, wait. If the loan...
Actually happened September 1st. You're saying that the August 15th...
August 15th will always have precedence.
The August 1st transaction? That's what you said.
The August 15th...
Would take over... Let's say it was August 1st and August 15th. Two separate transactions.
Right. If you extended a loan on August 1st, but you post-dated the document to September 1st...
September 1st, there was a document, okay?
But when the loan was done.
Yeah,
September 1st or September 1st?
September 1st. Forget about that. But there was two other transactions which happened. One happened August 1st. When it happens August 15th.
So we always go in, the earliest always gets precedence.
You put in one little kitty, and then they're both equal.
No, we always go in order of the date that the...
Oh, it goes by order of... Okay, I thought it was... It was before, you put them all together, and then...
Well, no, I mean, we're always going to collect, right? The earliest
The talking about the lien. The lien.
Right. I mean the lien. Right. The liens will always be collected from the first. Right. In order. Right. Because the first one. No. Because the one from August 1st had the lien property. Right. Had the rights because the loan was extended first. So it's to the disadvantage of the creditor to make it as if it happened September 1st. If he chooses to do that, that's his business. So the Gemara says, okay. Now the Gemara says, but wait a second. Drisha v'chakira, what happens in Drisha v'chakira? Right, you ask. You claim, let's take a capital crime, right? You claim that you saw, Mr. Plum in the living room with the candlestick on, right, September 1st. Murder, whatever, Mr. Green. I forget all the names from Clue, but whatever it is, right, Mr. So they'll ask, okay, well, you claim it was September 1st. Okay, well, what was the weather like? Right? Because how did you see? Right? You claim there was a blackout that day. So it must have been sunny outside if you saw anyways. Okay. But I'm looking at the newspaper and, you know, it turns out that September 1st was an extremely cloudy thunderstorm. It's very unlikely that you saw. So how did you see the crime? Right? We ask questions like that. We go through all the different details and we try to figure out whether the story matches up. Right? You said that he hit him with the candlestick. Well, how heavy was this candlestick that it managed to kill him? Etc., etc. But what does that assume? That assumes that you need to actually know the date. You actually need to be able to ask questions like that. But if you're allowed to post-date a document, so then you couldn't do the same thing for a monetary case. Because what would happen? Right? The Mishnah had said you can do Drisha v'chakira. Drisha v'chakira means we ask question after question to see, is it plausible that you were actually there? But once you say you're allowed to post-date a document, they'll just say, you're right, I wasn't there September 1st. It happened August 1st, but what's the big deal? I'm allowed to post-date it. So how can you, if you think that you need Drisha v'chakira, meaning you're allowed to ask all these questions, what was the weather like on the day that you signed the document? Well, if you're allowed to post-date a document, you must not be asking these questions. Right? Because hichi chashin and shemeichru v'chasvu. How could you ask the questions? We should just assume that it was post-date, and that's why you don't know what the weather was like when on September 1st. So the Gemara says, v'litaymech tikchilach masnisen. The Gemara says, wait a second, your problem is really with the Mishnah, because the Mishnah said that sharichova mukdamim sulam amucharin ksherin. Predated documents are problematic, right? Because that would mean that you are giving the creditor an unfair advantage in terms of liens by throwing the loan back 6 months. That you can't do. But a post-dated one, as we've already explained, is kosher. And if you really think that you need drisha v'chakira, why are you allowed to post-date a shtar? So the Gemara says, you're right. I could have asked from a Mishnah. I could ask from a Braisa. Lo kasha tadifa mina karmin dafilech abenisen v'shmita delo shchiche inche demuzve dileka lemeim Hashem ha'ichru v'chasvu delo mara l'shtari afilu achi kevin deshvias sove mishtametes machshirin mikomakom kasha. He said, my question was a bit of a mouthful, but I'll explain it like this. Gemara says, in the case where I say that I lent money as Shemitah was approaching, right, during Shemitah itself, right, on the first of Nisan. So we paskin that Shemitah gets rid of loans, gets rid of debt at the end of Shemitah. So the case of the Braisa was where the Reuven claimed that he had a loan extended to him by Shimon on Rosh Chodesh Nisan of a Shemitah year, which means 6 months before the loan is going to be, right, is going to evaporate into thin air no matter what happens. The Gemara says, I might have thought that in that case, isn't it obvious, right, that that is post-dated, right? Like, that must be post-dated, right? I mean, why would any normal person extend a loan 6 months before Shemitah is over? I mean, the whole thing is unlikely. It makes sort of sense. Maybe the guy lends it to him 3 years ago. He just didn't care so much about a lien, right? So he gave him 3.5 years to claim the property, but only 6 months worth of lien. So that I could swallow, right? But as soon as I see a document which says that he lent money during Shemitah 6 months before the loan is going to disappear, that seems so unlikely. I might have thought that document, must be post-dated.
Why did you say he wrote a personal?
Right, so it could be, but the Gemara doesn't even bring that up. Right. So the... Well, that would have, but I don't know why the Gemara doesn't bring it up. I mean, technically you'd have to write another document, you have to have evidence of that, I guess. The Gemara says, but even in that case, I might have thought that, you know, this document is either, right, post-dated or a lie, right, because it just doesn't make sense. So the Gemara had to tell you that, no, like, under normal circumstances, we'll believe the shtar as it is, even if it's unlikely, that doesn't matter. Right, it might be post-dated, but if they say it's not post-dated, so it's, you know, not post-dated. I mean, we're not going to question it. So that's why we brought in that case, just to tell you that even though there you might doubt the authenticity of such a document, we can believe it. But you're right, the question is the same from both of the Mishnah and the Braisa. Okay, so then the Gemara continues. Okay, so what is the answer, though? Right, that's the question. We've now established that you can ask the same question from both the Mishnah and the Braisa, but the Gemara said there's still a problem, that the assumption of the notion of a shtar me'ucha, or a post-dated shtar, is that you don't do drisha v'chakira. You don't ask all these questions. What day was it? What time was it? Etc. Because once it's post-dated, you can't ask those questions. Our Mishnah says explicitly that you do drisha v'chakira. You do ask those questions by monetary case. So what's the halacha? So Amar Rav Chanina, Dvar Torah, Echad Dinei Mamonos, Ve'echad Dinei Nefashos, B'drisha v'chakira. On a biblical level, you're right. You need both. Because it says you need a uniform law. So why does, in fact, do we not require it? Because the halacha we don't. So Gemara says, Kadesh lo tinel delas bipnei lovin. Biblically, we needed it. But Chazal got rid of it. They said in monetary cases, we're not going to do it because it makes it really onerous. Right? By capital crimes, we want to acquit. So we make it almost impossible for anybody to testify. By monetary law, if we make it impossible for you to testify, no one's going to want to lend money because they'll never be able to prove it. And therefore, we got rid of this high bar of questioning by monetary law to encourage people to extend loans. So the Gemara says, what are you talking at? Talking about El Meata, Tolo Yishalmu. Why does that help? Right? Meaning it's true that you make it easier for people to testify. That also means it makes it easier for there to be mistakes because you aren't being as careful in your accepting of testimony. You think people want to lend money when they know that the courts aren't being so careful in how they adjudicate cases. People don't want mistakes to be made either. So Rav offers another answer. Rav Amar Masnisin Dahacha Bedine Kinasos V'idach V'odas Belvaos. Said there's two types of monetary law. There's fines. Fines, we have no... If we exempt somebody from a fine, nobody loses out, right? Fines are fundamentally La Hashem. Because, right, if someone steals from somebody else and has to pay back double or quadruple or quintuple in the case of sheep and ox. So look, as long as we obligate Reuven to pay back Shimon the ox that he stole, Shimon doesn't lose out if he doesn't get back the fivefold payment from Reuven. Right? The reason we obligate him to pay fivefold is because it was also a crime against God. So we don't care if we fail to obligate Reuven in the Knas, and therefore, in the case of Knasot, in the case of fines, we do impose Drisha v'chakira. We really do try to exempt Reuven from his obligation, but by normal monetary law, halvot and odot, halvot being loans and odot being any case where Reuven admits that he owes money to Shimon for whatever reason, in those cases, we do not impose Drisha v'chakira. So that's answer two. Rav Papa Amar no idi v'idi v'hodah v'halva'a. Both cases are by regular monetary law. But kan b'din meruma, kan b'din m'sheina ruma. The norm is that we don't question the witnesses extensively in monetary law. But if we suspect that they're lying, what's called a din meruma, so then the judges have the right to seek out the truth. And we've seen this several times throughout the Masechta, where the Gemara says, right, don't think, right, I think this is on Dav Zayin, or Dav Zayin, where the Gemara had said, A judge shouldn't say, look, I went through all the motions, I asked the witnesses, they said all the right answers. If it turns out that they're lying and I put the person to death, that's not my problem, right? It's the witness's problem, right? The kolar is totally by him. God will take it out on them for lying. I don't have to kill myself here. I don't have to beat myself up to try to figure out whether they're telling the truth. Even if I feel like something's odd, like something's off, so whatever, let the judgment go through. It's not my problem. The Gemara says, no, you have an actual obligation to seek out the truth. And therefore, let's say you feel that something's amiss. So the Gemara in the first paragraph said, if you feel like something's amiss, but you can't put your finger on it, you can't, and the Edom are so good that you're just convinced that they're really good lawyers, so you just have to recuse yourself from the case. Your other option is what Reish Lakish says here, to the Reish Lakish, to Reish Lakish, Rami Ksiv. Reish Lakish said, look, there's two different psukim. One pasuk says, v'tzedek tishpat amizecha. In one pasuk it says, judge with truth, with justice. And another pasuk says, tzedek tzedek tirdof. Not just judge, but chase after justice. Now, chasing after justice implies you're doing something more active. So which is it? Do you just judge sort of passively, or do you have to chase it? So the Gemara says, okay, tzad kan bedin meruma, kan bedin shein meruma. If everything seems like it's on the up and up, so then judge it fairly and move on. If something feels off, and you can't put your finger on it, so then, do whatever you need to do to find the truth. So therefore, Reish Lakish's answer, or the Rav Papa's answer based on Reish Lakish, is that when the Gemara says, when the Mishnah says, rather, that you need Drisha v'chakira by monetary law, it doesn't mean that you always need it. It means, normally, if everything seems simple enough, the witnesses come in and say, Reuven lent money to Shimon, nobody argues. They just want to work out the details, they want to figure out how much, but everything is straightforward, so sure, you don't need to do Drisha v'chakira, you don't need to try to figure out what's going on. If everything is as it seems and no one's arguing, so fine, so judge the case. But if something seems amiss, so then ask as many questions as you need to try to figure out the actual truth. Ravashi offers a fourth answer. Ravashi says, Ravashi Omar Masnizin Kiddushani, Kiddushaninon, Kroy Echad Ledin, Vechad Lepshara. He said, it depends. Are you seeking justice? Are you seeking a compromise? If you're seeking justice, you have to ask questions. If you're seeking the compromise, so in a case of a compromise, that's the whole point, is you don't care what the absolute truth is, you're trying to compromise. Get the basic facts and come up with a compromise. If they're agreeing to compromise, so sure. You don't need to do Drisha v'chakira. If you're trying to judge the case, you do. Kiditanya, as the Braisa says, this is another way of understanding the psukim. Tzedek tzedek tirdof, echad ladin v'echad l'pshara. Right, there's two ways you could judge things. One is for, right, you have one mode for justice and one for compromise. So what's the case? The Gemara says, look, Ketzad, let me illustrate it. Shtei Shvinos Ovros Benar. Let's say you have two boats that are trying to cross the river at the same time. Right? It's a thin enough part of the river, only one can pass at the same time. Upagu Zebazeb. Shuim over Shteyen. Shteyen Tovos Bezechar Zeh. Shteyen Ovros. Right? If they go at the same time, they'll sink. But if they go one after the other, so then they'll cross. Or chein shnei gmalim, or you have two camels, shayolim b'malot beit charon, they're going up on a very narrow path on the side of a mountain. Upagu zeh bezeh, malu shnei shneim nuflin bezeh charzeh shneim olin. And if they both try to go at the same time, they'll end up pushing each other off the cliff. If they go one after the other, they'll be safe. So what do you do? So haketzad. So, tuuna v'she'ena tuuna. If one of them is laden and one of them is not, so meaning one of them is buckling under its weight and one of them is on its way back, going to get new stuff, so it has nothing on its back, so then the one that has stuff on its back goes first, and the one that's empty goes second. Tidcha sheina tuna b'bnei tuna, put the one that's laden first. Krova v'sheina krova, tidcha krova b'nei sheina krova, if one has a farther distance to go. One's been traveling forever and has a long way to go. So, you know what? You want to get the person on the way. So then, let the one who's going the farther distance go before the one that's a shorter distance. But stay in Krovos, stay in Rechokos. But what happens if they're both equivalent? They both have loads. They both don't have loads. They both are coming and going to the same distance. So, Hatel, Pshara b'nehen, compromise. One of them will go first. And they'll make a deal between them. One of them will say, I'll go first. The other one will say, okay, I'll pay you. And the one who goes first will pay the one who has to go second for his lost time. So that's the Gemara's illustration of what a compromise looks like. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Tzedek, tzedek, tir dof. The Gemara now is another drush on the word tzedek, tzedek, tir dof. Right. First, it said that it's telling us that sometimes you have to pursue truth actively and root out liars. The next one says that there's different standards for pure justice and compromise. Now the Gemara offers a third drasha for the word tzedek tzedek tir dof. What does it mean to chase after justice? So the Gemara says holech achar beis din yafeh. It means that you can force the other party to go to a better court, right? Certain courts have better reputations, right? The judges are known as being particularly honest, at being particularly insightful. So you should go, and you should go to the best court you can find. Achar Rabbi Elazar Lulud. Then the Gemara gives examples, right? Rabbi Elazar's court in Lud was like that. Achar Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai Livorchel. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is Bezdin in Vorchel. You should seek after them, right? You should run after them. Tana.
We said the other day that the borrower can't force the
right, lender. So that's, the Gemara will bring that up. It's going to be in the end of, okay. I think it's the end of today, if it's not the beginning of tomorrow. Correct. The Gemara is going to distinguish, but so far the Gemara is just establishing this as a principle. okay, so the Gemara says, Tana, kol rechayim biburni, shavua, Havain, Shavua Havain. So if you look at Rashi, he says, right, Kol Rechaim, the sound of a millstone, which is heard in Burni, which is a place, Shavua Havain, Shavua Havain, Simenu, Sheyesh Sham, Bris Mila, Kamachra, Omar, Shavua Havain, rather. Kan, Rechaim, Simen, Lashchika, Samvon, Lamaka, Satinok, Vishas, Xeris, Malchus, Haya, Shigazu, Shalomo, Vayurem, Lotzi, Kol, Vakabu, Simen, Zeh. So, Mara says there used to be that when they forbade a bris, so how could you let everybody know that a bris was happening? Instead of saying there was a bris, you would say, Kol Rechaim Viburni, would mean, if you would say there is a millstone now in Burni, would mean in a week from now there is a bris. Or Haner before Chel, Mishtesham. Mishtesham. If people said there's a candle burning in Borchel, which is where Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's Bezdin was, which is why this comes up in the first place, that was code for there's a wedding in Borchel. Okay. What? Kol Rechaim is, no, Kol Rechaim is a bris, and Or is a wedding.
That's what they say, that's why they have a candle by the Chasanin, but a bris also, they have candles.
Yeah, I don't know, I don't, maybe. Maybe it's related to this. Oh, that just says in the footnote? Okay. There you go. Okay, so the Gemara then, after that short aside, comes back to it. Tana Rabbanan, tzedek tzedek tzedov, follow chachamim li yeshiva. So again, follow right, the chachamim to their court. And now the Gemara just gives a series of more examples. Achar b'lazer lelud, achar b'yochanan zakkai lebrochel, achar b'shul lepkiin, achar b'nyamlel yavne, achar b'kiva lebnei brak, achar b'mafti leromi, achar b'chanani ben tarajan lesichne, achar b'yotzi litzipori, achar b'yehuda ben besir lenitzavin, achar b'shuva legola, achar rebi lebeisharim, achar chachomim lelishkas hagazes. Right, those are all that's your list of all the different batei dinim. Okay, so dinei mamonos, poschen v'chulei. So monetary laws, we said, we open from, right, anybody can open. We can open Bein L'Schos, Bein L'Chova, as opposed to capital law, where we start from the most junior, and we only start in favor. So the Gemara is Eichyam Rinan. So how do we do this? Right, how exactly do you open the case in favor of acquittal? What do you do? So I'm Rav Yehuda Hachi Amrin Lehu. Mi Yemar Kidika Amirthu. You turn to the witnesses who claim that Reuven killed Shimon on September 1st, and you say, really? Did it happen as you say? Right? You start intimidating them right off the bat to imply that you doubt their story. Amr Le'ula, you can't go that far. Vachasminin Lehu. You're shutting their mouths. You're muzzling them. The Gemara says, Vilachasmu, who cares? So muzzle them. Milo Tanya, didn't we learn in a brisa that Rishimon ben Elazar Omer, Masina Sa'idim Amakom Lamakom Kadesh Titarif Daiton Viyachsur Bahen? We do worse than that, right? Before we let the witnesses sit down, right? We don't let the witnesses in, give them a drink. We make them do laps, right? So they're so exhausted, so they're just confused, so they'll break down, right? A person can only lie when they're a good liar, right? Yeah, he has needed a clear head, so we exhaust them, right? We don't let them sleep. We just drive them crazy. So who cares? The whole point is we're trying to acquit the guy. And we'll see, this will come up over and over again. Rav Shechter likes noting that the Gemara has this notion, the Hitzilu Ha'eda, that the Beis Din is supposed to save the defendant, and that comes out throughout Sanhedrin, both as a...
Not a detriment,
it comes... We use it to darshan psukim, we use it to explain how we should judge cases. This is like the principle in Dine Monos. We do everything in our power to acquit, including interpret psukim in ways that are to the benefit of acquittal, as we will see later on. Specifically, when the Vitzilu Eida is the drasha that the Gemara uses to prove that if all 23 judges rule to convict, the person is innocent. Because it can't be that there's something lacking fundamentally in a Beis Din. If not one of them can find a reason to acquit, that means they're not doing their job properly. So we do everything in our power here to confuse the witnesses so that we can acquit the guy. The Gemara said, look, me dummy. I understand. When you exhaust the witnesses by making them do laps, you're not actually shutting them down. You're just, it happens by itself. You're exhausting them, and then if they can't remember their testimony, they can't lie. So great. But that's worse than having a judge actually shut the guy down. You can't do that. That's just too much. Okay, right. We can't say, are you sure that you're telling the truth? Right? That's too in your face. So what do? Instead, what we do is we say, we open up the case and say, okay, you said what you said. We turn to one of the parties and we say, are there witnesses? Do you think that could undermine the testimony through hazama? So Amar Le Rabba, that's not fair. That's not fair. You can't open with Hazama because, sure, if you manage to be mazim the witnesses, so the defendant will get off scot-free. But let's say it's a murder trial. The defendant will get off scot-free and the witness will be put to death. Right? If you have Adam Zomben, you can't try to acquit the defendant at the cost of the Edom's lives, right? That's, if you're trying to acquit everyone, that's not fair. So the Gemara says, "Umiavi chavaso, but tonight Edom zomen neragin atchik maradin." The Gemara says, "That's not true. You can't become an Edomen until after conviction. So if you try to introduce Edom zomen in the middle of the judgment, they're not going to be punished. So it's not lechavasom." So the Gemara says, "Hachi amina." The Gemara says, it's not totally true. This is what I mean. Ilu shasik hai adik mig mardinu umaisi edim umazim lu habli chavashal sazeh. Edim zomen is still potentially very detrimental to the witnesses if you waited till Gemara din. So we don't want to encourage edim zomen. So Ela amar Rabba, amrinan la yeshacha edim lahachishan. All we simply say is, do you have witnesses who contradict this? Right? If there are contradictory witnesses, everything's thrown out. And that's our ideal. We just want to throw out the case if we can. Rav Kahana Omar. Rav Kahana says, no, we do something like this. And we say like this. Midivrechem nizdache ploni. Right? Rashi says, kach poskin b'schus. L'achar kabal tzeis omar. Mitoch divrechem nizdache ploni. Tzofu lo tzeis mibez and zaka. L'firos einenu. V'achar kach nosin v'nosin. Right? What we do is we open up and we say, from your testimony, I still think there's room to acquit the guy, right? We set the tone in the courtroom, and even after the testimony, we can acquit. Abayi v'rabba dami travayu. Am rinan lei. Ilo katalt lo tidchal. We turn to the defendant, and we say, look, if you didn't actually kill, and they're lying, don't worry. You'll be okay. Again, we're setting the tone that we want to acquit the defendant. Rav Ashi Amar, kol mi sheyodeh lo tzchus yavo yamed alav. what we do is we announce, anyone who has any evidence in favor of the defendant, bring it. Tanya Kavasi Dabai Rava. We have a brisa like Abai and Rava, Rebbe Omer. In the case of Sota, right, we open and we say, if a man didn't sleep with you and you didn't commit adultery, that's what it means to open with schos, that we turn to the person and say, look, regardless of what happened, if it turns out that you're innocent, don't worry. We set the tone for the court case and say, we're going to do everything that we can to acquit you.